I just want to thank Rabbi Gannett for organizing this and for being behind it and for talking about animals, birds, and fishery. So we're going to be able to move along right to the second half of the program. And okay, as Rabbi Gannett pointed out, that it would seem that all of these animals that I'm speaking about, bison, red deer, giraffe, it would seem there should be no question about the kashrut. After all, regarding animals, regarding quadrupeds, as opposed to birds or kagogim, there are clear signs in the Torah, split hoof and short cut. So what could possibly be the issue regarding bison, regarding red deer, regarding giraffe? What are the issues about these animals? The first issue that I want to talk about, which Rabbi Gannett actually addressed already, is the issue of Masorah. So I'll just very briefly go over that. This issue came up and is addressed with regard to the American bison. As everybody knows, here in the U.S., you get almost anything. You get venison, you get bison, you get all kinds of varieties of meat. American bison is a question, though. If, as Rabbi Gannett pointed out, there's a need for Masorah, the bison would seem to be a problem. Is the bison, like the turkey, which someone asked about earlier, bison is a New World animal. In America, by the way, we call it buffalo. Buffalo is really a mistaken identification. Buffalo refers either to the African water buffalo, to the water buffalo of Europe that I'll talk about in a few minutes. It's more correctly referred to as the bison. Bison is a New World animal, and if one needs a Masorah, there would not seem to be Masorah on the bison. Why might one need a Masorah? So Rabbi Gannett already went through the whole discussion. It's based on a shach, which is in the Siman, which is a source book that deals with the difference between Behema and Chaya. It's not in the Siman that deals with identifying kosher animals. Because of that, the Prima Godin says there's no need for Masorah. Rav Herzog not only said there's no need, as Rabbi Gannett pointed out, he said that Baal Tosef, if somebody wants to add that, there was a strong exchange of letters between Rav Herzog and the Chazon Ish. The question of bison again recently came up when it was being started to being shechted in the U.S. about 10 years ago. And recently a kuntzuch was published by somebody in Brooklyn called Kashrus of Bison. He goes through all the different discussions about whether you need a Masorah, you don't need a Masorah. And then when he gets down to it, he didn't want to
decide on his own.
So he sent letters to many of the Gdolim in Eretz Yisrael, and the letters that he got back, I think the most significant, is the one already that Rabbi Gannett pointed out by Rav Osner. And there Rav Osner, who's sitting in Bnei Brak, the home of the Chazon Ish, said, you know what, you folks in America, this kuntzuch was published in Flatbush, no need to worry, you can eat bison. When the question comes to Israel, we'll worry about it again. So bison is today available in the U.S. under the Ashkach of the OU. There's been in the past Starkey, I don't know if that still is. But bison is acceptable. Rabbi Gannett also talked about the zebu. Here you see some zebu that are being raised in northern Israel. So it's not only in South America for a second, it's also it's being raised today in Israel. There's a zebu, and these are pictures that we took in Israel. Yes?
Sorry, I'm very uncomfortable with the concept that in Israel it's a problem, but America it's not. How can we deal with that?
As Rabbi Gannett explained, what he's really saying is you don't need a Masorah. But because in Israel, where the Chazon Ish lived, particularly in Bnei Brak, he didn't want to be matzurit there. Why? It was a chumrah, but clearly the Ikar Adani says it's not a problem. We're going to get to that with birds later today, where you'll see that there are places where there are mutter and not mutter. And if it comes to the dinner tonight, we'll even discuss some things that we're not serving tonight, even though they're commercially available in Israel. So with birds, it's a much bigger issue. With animals, it's essentially, it's clear that you don't need a Masorah, according to Abbas. So the zebu, I wrote here, a topic has been way overdone. That's because about 2 years ago, it was in every paper, in every Haredi paper in Israel. But even here this morning, I cannot say it's certainly been taken care of. I just want to point out one additional point. And that's over here. We have here a mosaic from the floor of the Beit Alpha synagogue from the 5th and 6th century. It doesn't prove to us that there's a Masorah. There are many mosaics on floors of shuls of non-kosher animals. There's eagles and lions. But what it does show us is that the zebu, and this is most clearly a zebu, this hump is quite unique to the zebu. What it does show us is that the zebu was known in Eretz Yisrael at least 1,500 years ago. So the zebu was not a new animal. It's not something that was imported in the 20th century from Madagascar. It was known in Eretz Yisrael. And it may be that it was shechted over the years as well. We haven't yet found a Masorah, a continuous Masorah, But there's no question that it's it was known.
And the artist clearly split its hooves.
Right. Okay, the water buffalo. Water buffalo, again, should not be a question. Water buffalo is indeed a buffalo, unlike the bison. It's known in Hebrew by the Arabic name Jamus. Some people in modern Hebrew call it Ta'o. Ta'o is a biblical word. It's one of the animals listed in this Talmud's Parsha. We don't know if the water buffalo that was shown here is indeed the Ta'o of the Torah, so most people just prefer to call it by the Arabic name, the Jamus. Water buffalo also would seem to be no question. Split hooves, chew this card, shouldn't be an issue. But as we mentioned, there are those who are interested in eating animals, only animals that have Masorah. So we went out to check if it has a Masorah. And not only were we looking for Masorahs on the water buffalo, we wanted to get the official approval of the chief rabbinate in Israel. So we approached the current chief rabbi, who's in charge of Kashrus, and the Sephardi chief rabbi, Rav Amar. We approached him and we asked him about it. And we brought him the evidence that I'm about to show you. For example, here is a Shurkin of Yitzchak Wirtz, an old fellow who lives in Yerushalayim today. Ari Greenspan and I went to interview him. He remembers and testifies that in the late 1940s, early 1950s, they shechted in Yerushalayim under the Ashkacha of Rabbi Pesach Frank and the other leading Shurkin, who none of us would recognize the name, but they were the leading Shurkin at the time in Yerushalayim. They shechted Jebus by the thousands. So much so that they used to import water buffalo from other countries to shecht in Yerushalayim. So even though it at the time lived in the Chula Valley, this is before the early Zionists drained the Chula Valley, this is before the later Zionists in the late 20th century refilled the Chula Valley, but at that time there were water buffalo in the Chula Valley, but that wasn't enough, and they were importing them as well, shechting them by the thousands. We have other testimony from Menachrim, who would testify that the Dnieper in the late 40s on water buffalo. In other words, we have plenty of evidence that the water buffalo has a Masorah. I just want to point out one thing. You know, I'll get back to this in a minute. Okay. Should be another slide. Masorah l'chumra. As I pointed out, Rav Bodnar seems to say you don't need a Masorah. The Tzvi Megadim says you don't need a Masorah. It seems that it's a chumra to require a Masorah. Nonetheless, there are those people who have indicated that l'chumra they would like to follow the Chazanish. And people who I've heard talking about how, you know, yak or other animals that don't have a Masorah, they would like to avoid it because the Shita of the Chazanish, despite the Chazanish being a minority opinion, despite Rav Bodnar's position on bison, which indicated he felt he don't need a Masorah, some people want to be Choshesh. When I heard this, I just had to put in one little point that I heard from Rav Zev Leff, nothing to do with conscience of animals. Rav Zev Leff at one point in a speech was talking about something else. And he said, you know, he said, it's very interesting. I've heard many people in Flatbush who are very machbir on the Chazanish Shita, maimid of sukkah, that you won't use any metal. He said, and there are now people in Flatbush who are trying to be machbir by that. He said, I don't understand it. He said, those people don't seem to be choshish at all for the Shita of the Chazanish that weren't required to live in the land of Israel. Okay. So again, we said that there are clear simonim, lidhof, shuwitz kod. One of the issues, first issue we talked about is Masorah. Second issue has to do with dentition, with the teeth. What could possibly the teeth have to do with kashrus of animals? So if we can go to the source book for a moment, I just want to read you a few sources. We could look on page 9 in the source book, page 9.
Maybe you should just mention, just interesting, that the word buffalo is quoted in the Ramah. Because the buffalo has a shiloh whether it's a chai or a behemoth.
Right, and the buffalo there is talking about the water buffalo.
And it requires a kisiyadam.
But it's not, I think it's the shokanok, it's both the shokanok and the rabbah. Yeah. The shokanok talks about the buffalo, bet, vav, pei, lam, vav, simen, chof, tes, I think it is. Simen, chof, tes, chof, tes, somewhere around there, in Yoredea. The buffalo there is clearly the water buffalo, and how can I prove that to you? There is shokanok is quoted by the Shaimi training. And the Shaimi training in the 13th century talks about buffalo. And we know that in Italy in the 13th century, buffalo referred to water buffalo. Okay, if we look now in Chulin Nutas Amar Aleph, the Gemara, three lines into the Gemara, says, it's Gemara's quoting of Tosefta in Chulin. Okay, page, again, it's page 9 in the source book. The Gemara's quoting of Tosefta, which says, Kol behema shemale gera, biadua she'em la shenayim lamala, v'tahoyra. Very concise. But very problematic to set. He says, every animal that's malagera, we know that it does not have teeth, upper teeth, and therefore it's kosher. So again, the Tosefta seems to be pointing unidirectional, one direction. The Tosefta says, if it's maligera, it's not going to have upper teeth. Okay, that's all it tells us. It doesn't tell us anything about the other direction. We're going to have to hold still for a second. If we skip down now, 6 more lines, the Gemara turns the Tosefta on its head. The Gemara says, Alahachi kamar, kol behema she'en la shinayim l'mala, b'yadua she'y maligera, u'mafres es parasu v'tahara. So which thing tells us what? The Tosefta said, if it's maligera, I know it doesn't have upper teeth. The Gemara turns it 180 degrees, and the Gemara tells us no. The Gemara says, if it doesn't have upper teeth, I know it's maligera, and it's kosher. So the Gemara seems to say that, according to this interpretation of the Tosefta, if I inspect an animal, I don't find upper teeth, no problem, I now know that it's kosher. I don't have to check anything else. No upper, and it turns out it's upper front teeth. If you have any questions about that, Ari means to the dentist, he'll explain over there. But it means it's only upper front teeth. If there are no canines and incisors in the upper jaw, the Gemara seems to say that it's a proof that it's a kosher animal. And based on that, if we skip down now to the second of the middle wide lines, now you see there are three sides of the second of the middle wide lines, Amrav Chista, but Chista is now going to apply this in practice. Hoya Mahalek Bederach, a person's walking in a desert someplace, Umatza Behema Shapira Gamum, and he finds an animal that he cannot inspect the upper jaw. No problem. Bodek the parsosah, you check the hooves. In parsosah, stukos, if it has split hooves. Biaduashi Torah, im lav, biaduashi tmeya. Ubavad shakya kazir. In other words, check the hooves. If it has split hooves, I don't need to check anything else. As long as it's not a chazir, I can rely on the fact that it's kosher. Okay? Split hooves and not a pig is enough to make it kosher. And then the Gemara goes on, if we skip, keep going. Hoya Mahalek, the midbar, skip down to the third wide line. Umatza Behema Shapia Gomu, no, we missed one, sorry. Where's the first one fit here? Yeah, there it is. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry, it's right, it's in the middle again. It's just the small lines, two lines under we read before. You find an animal that's missing its hooves. Bodek the pia, you can inspect its mouth. Im ein lashinayim l'mala, piyadua shehi tara. If it doesn't have upper front teeth, that's good enough. You know it's kosher. Im lav, but if it does have teeth, piyadua shehi tara. It seems to now be both ways. If it does not have teeth, it's kosher. If it does have teeth, it's not kosher. Ubavach yakir gamal. As long as you recognize the gamal, and the Gemara says, what do you mean? Gamal nivi yisle, gamal does have teeth. El ubavach yakir ben gamal. So the Gemara says very clear. You walk in the desert, Rav Chisda tells us, you find an animal with no hooves, you can't inspect any of its 4 feet, look at its upper jaw, no upper teeth, and it's not a young camel, you know it's kosher. If it does have teeth, the Gemara seems to say, it's not kosher. Now, if we skip to page 29. Page 29 is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch brings the Gemara. Shulchan Aruch says in the second line, Kol behem v'chayish ein la shenayim b'lechi elyon v'lo nivim, and then he explains what nivim are. Skip down a line, v'yadua shehi tahora. So the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch brings just one direction. If it does not have upper front teeth, you know it's a kosher animal. The Shulchan Aruch tells us nothing about if it does have teeth. And if you skip down another three lines, l'fikach, Hamotzi, it brings up Chista, the Shulchan Aruch brings up Chista, Befikach Hamotzi, Bamidba Behema, Ve'ena Makiro, you don't know the animal, you obviously don't have Mesorah on it, Tupasoser, Chatuchos, it does not have any of its four hooves, Shre'eni Ochel Adokben, Yivdok, Ve'en Lashinayim, Lonivim Lamala, Be'adushi Torah, Vushiakir Ben Gamal. So Shulchan Aruch stops at that, tells us nothing about if it has teeth. The Shulchan Aruch brings it as unidirectional. No upper front teeth, it's kosher. What does this all have to do with practical kashrus? Well, there's so Rav Amar, the chief rabbi, I told him we went to talk to him about the water buffalo. Rav Amar was concerned about the Gemara. The Gemara seems to have it bidirectional. If there are no front teeth, kosher. If there are front teeth, it's not kosher. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that. Shulchan Aruch only brought one direction. Rav Amar, that's him in the middle. Rav Amar was concerned about that Gemara for some reason, and Rav Amar wanted to inspect the water buffalo and see, does it indeed have upper front teeth? So we took him up to the Chula Valley. This is up in the Chula Valley. They've reflooded it. They've reintroduced all the natural animals and birds. And We took it to inspect. Here he's inspecting the hooves. That was relatively easy because we found some dead water buffalo. He was not able to inspect the jaw. The live water buffalo were not cooperative. So we took him to Moshav Bitzeron. Moshav Bitzeron is a moshav in southern Israel where they raise water buffalo for milk. They raise it to make cheese because real mozzarella cheese is only from water buffalo milk. They raise a water buffalo in order to make mozzarella cheese. Here he thought he might be able to inspect the upper jaw more closely. Here you see them holding open the upper jaw and the chief rabbi trying to inspect it. These water buffalo also were not the most cooperative. And the chief rabbi said, could you please bring me just the head? And not only one head, he wanted three heads. I don't know why, but he asked the three animals to be shechted. And here is in the office of the chief rabbi, just the head. Again, that's the chief rabbi. And you can see him inspecting the head of one of the three water buffalo. Okay, there you can get a close look. You'll notice, like all kosher animals, there are no upper front teeth. There's simply a pad up here. With these are the front teeth and the lower jaw. When a kosher animal, when a ruminant eats, it chops up the grass, and then it grinds the grass with the lower front teeth against this pad that's in the upper jaw. No upper front teeth. The only thing is the chief rabbi, for some reason, still wasn't satisfied. So he requested dental x-rays. The dentist over here, Ari Greenspan, took dental x-rays. Here you see the upper right, lower right, lower left. Lower jaw has teeth. Upper jaw, you'll see, there is no indication of upper teeth, even within the gum. But of course, the dentist couldn't stop there. He did point out that there's evidence of decay in the lower end. That all has to do with the water buffalo. The water buffalo, after inspecting in his office, the chief rabbi decided that indeed the water buffalo is kosher. We received a letter from him, and the water buffalo, which was eaten in Israel, as I mentioned, by the thousands in the 1950s, could again be eaten in Israel now. But the question that's now bothering the chief rabbi is the question of the elk, or known as the red deer in Europe. In Europe, called the red deer, in the U.S., it's the elk. In Chief Rabbi Amar's article, it's known as the Ayal Australi, because the ones in Israel were imported from Australia, and he refuses to listen to the fact that it really comes from Europe. But the red deer is much more of a serious question when it comes to the upper front teeth. Because if you look over here, here is the jaw of a sheep. Sheep has lower front teeth, no upper front teeth. The red deer, you'll notice, has an upper front tooth on each side. The chief rabbi has written at least, I'm familiar with, five articles in five different locations on the red deer where he has asked it because of these upper front teeth. Now, as I pointed out, the Gemara indeed seems to indicate that if there are upper front teeth, it's not kosher. The way many other people read that Gemara, if you look again, it's not talking about straight halakha. The Gemara is quoting Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is talking about a case to give mahalek b'midbar. Rav Chisda says, you find an animal that you don't know if it's kosher. If it does not have upper front teeth, Rav Chisda says, b'yadua shi'itara. And if it does have upper front teeth, well, you no longer know. If it has upper front teeth, it may be a red deer, which some people want to say is kosher. It may be a lion. It may be something that's not kosher. How are you, the mahalek b'midbar, to treat it? You have no choice but you have to treat it as tomato. And that's how many other people want to understand it. And that's how they want to understand the Shulchan Aruch's understanding of it, because the Shulchan Aruch left out that second half. The Shulchan Aruch never tells us that it has upper front teeth. It's not kosher. And not only that, but if you look at Rashi on the Gemara, Rashi says, Elohokikama, kol behemah she'ein lo shinayim, if it doesn't have upper front teeth, we said it's kosher. Rashi says, biyadua shemale gera. If it doesn't have upper front teeth, you know it's a maligera. The ain anu tzrichim lahamtin ad shiyireh im maligera. We don't have to wait to see if it really is a maligera. What's implied from Rashi? That if I know it's a maligera, I don't need to deal with the teeth at all. The teeth are just, if I don't know if it's a maligera, I don't want to wait to find out. The teeth are another way of telling. But Rashi, again, some people want to understand, the chief rabbi disagrees, that Rashi is saying, if you know it's maligera, you have nothing to worry about. The teeth are only an indication when you don't know. In any case, this is still tearing apart Israeli society. It's a debate that's raging across the front pages of the papers. Rav Amar is answering their idea. He has at least, again, as I mentioned, five or six articles. Others, including Rav Machbud, one of the leading shochetim of the Don Badat, has insisted that it is kosher, and he has checked them. What we then went to find out, is there possibly a Masorah? The red deer, as I mentioned, is native to Europe. It also is native to the U.S. It's called the elk here. But we did not succeed in finding an old Masorah, if you want to say. But we did find the precedent. We found the precedent where we received testimony from a butcher that about, I don't remember the time, date about 15 years ago in Europe, it was Shechter. Again, it's not what I would call a Masorah from Yemei Kedem, but it does indicate that the Potik, the Rav HaMakshir of this restaurant, also felt that the red deer, the teeth, are not a problem. Okay, here is Yak.
What is the OU's policy?
The OU's policy is that it's being served tonight for dinner. Yak.
Why would Masorah help? Why would Masorah help?
And it might help me just establish what the halacha is. Because as I mentioned, it seems to be a problem with the Gemara, understanding the Gemara. Unless you want to say that the Shulchan Aruch was very medactic, which we usually like to say. The Shulchan Aruch, if he left something out, he left it out on purpose. Okay, Yak comes up very often in Israel. Yak only lives in Tibet, which is a very frequent question in Israel that I get. Why? Because Israelis, it seems, when they finish the army, have to serve an obligatory year hiking the mountains of Tibet. And many of them come and they want to know when they're in Tibet, could they drink the milk of the yak? So that question often comes up. Until now, I used to always say, well, it depends. You can have a Masorah, not have a Masorah. I'll get to that in 1 second. The other thing that's of interest is the Barbarossa. Those of you who are old enough may remember that about 20, 25 years ago, there was a New York Times article about kosher pig, the Barbarossa. Barbarossa is in no way kosher. It does not chew its cud. It does have squiggles like other pigs, but it's just simply a funny-looking pig from Southeast Asia. There's no reason why it should be kosher. I can't explain to you what the New York Times thought it was, although the New York Times has ways that, they can act talk about yesterday and writing all kinds of things. Yak is interesting. When we were looking, we were researching questions about the dinner, suddenly I fell upon this webpage of the OU, which showed the OU Mashkiach up in the mountains of Tibet searching for yak. And here's some milk fat taken from yak milk. I saw this. I went searching for a source of yak in the U.S. I found the webpage. I emailed it to Rabbi Mandel, who did a great job of getting the yak, shipping it from somewhere, I don't know, west of the Hudson. I don't know what's between the Pacific and the Hudson. Sure, another place west of the Hudson where they had a schlachthaus, and tonight yak will be served at the dinner. Okay, the Istanbul. This is in the Istanbul airport. We assume it's in Istanbul. I know nothing about its kashrus. Okay, so again, there are clear signs in the Torah. So what are the issues? We talked about Masorah. We talked about the dentition question. The last one is the hooves and other giraffe issues, which I'll just do quickly. The giraffe seems to be the source of many misconceptions, and via these misconceptions, we can clarify some of the issues. For those who don't know what a giraffe is, this is the plains of Kenya, and this from the wilds of Ramat Gan. Okay, the first issue that seems to come up is we don't know where to shech the giraffe. So for a while, I thought that this meant you need a tall room, we don't know where to shech. Know that people had other issues. Here, I don't know how it is in the U.S. In Israel, every shul has piles and piles of parsha sheets, every Shabbos. One of them that we get is put out by New Breshit, which is a children's organization. And a few years ago in Parshas Truma, they had here about giraffe. And they wrote, the giraffe calls him an antara, ulachori himutar, ulachla. The giraffe has all the signs, being split off in short scud, and it would seem that it should be permitted. Ach, unesar lachila, it's prohibited to eat. Why? Kevish et sabro, aroch ma'od, vehineni yodim, keitza, vehechem eshkotatum. It's a very long neck, we don't know where and how to shaft it. I never understood what the issue was. I mean, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, there's a siman called Makom Hashchita Betzavar, and it tells you upper and lower landmarks on the Kana and on the Veshi. So there are specific anatomic boundaries on the trachea and the esophagus. It's from the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch. It applies to all animals equally. For a pigeon, you have a few inches. For a cow, you have over 12 inches. If somebody has never looked at a cow's neck, take a look. They're not small either. You have quite a range there where to shech. And for a giraffe, you have close to 6 feet. So I at one point thought maybe I was the only one who knew this. So I called up the OU because they're the experts in kashrus. I spoke to a giraffe expert, a shrit expert, and he told me anyone who does not know where to shech the giraffe, anyone who doesn't know where to shech the giraffe either knows nothing about the laws of shechita or cannot hit the side of the barn with a baseball. Meaning you can't miss. Okay, next issue. Little. This is one of those sheets that appears in the U.S. called Halakha Brura. I intentionally cut off all the names so not to incriminate anybody here. But they had a special issue on the kashrus of exotic animals. And in there, when they talked of a giraffe, they said over there, a giraffe has a thin pad underneath its toes. The question is whether a thin pad is significant enough to prevent the hoof from being considered fully split. And, you know, could you click on that? Are you able to...
back or forward?
On the speaker. No, on the speaker, right over there. On the icon for the speaker. You know what? I forget it. We're late. We'll just give it. Then also, it's a quote. You can hear a shear from a rabbi in Brooklyn. It doesn't matter who also questioned whether a giraffe has a fully split hoof because it has this thin pad supposedly under its toes. Here I got a question from Bolivia a few years ago about a llama. This fellow also wanted to tell me a llama has its kosher. So let's go and inspect some hoofs. Here's what a llama looks like. Here's a llama's hoof. Llama's hoof indeed looks split. It looks quite good, but if you take a closer look, you'll notice that it's split in the front half, but posteriorly it's all fused. Okay, that's not considered a split hoof. Split hoof has to be bafris parsa vishoshases. It has to be fully split.
Is it mobile?
What?
Does it have to be mobile?
I don't think so, but it has to be fully split. Camel, according to the Torah, its hoof is not split. It's a fairish part. Yeah, if you look, you'll notice that this is the camel's hoof, this is my hoof. The camel's hoof looks over here. Again, it looks split in the front. But if we take a look underneath, you'll notice that again, posteriorly, the entire thing is fused. As the Torah says, camel's hoof is not split. Because we're late on time, I'll skip here. Another time, we can take a look at Rashi on Vayikra, Yud Aleph Chavav. Rashi, I don't know if in France you ever saw a camel, but it describes beautifully what it means by being split in the front and not on the back, exactly as you just saw in that slide. Rashi describes it beautifully in the Rashi over here. Pig, the Torah tells us that the hoof is fully split, and indeed, if you take a look, the hoof is fully split. Red deer, fully split hoof. How about a giraffe? Now, I totally, fully split. I apologize, we didn't bring the giraffe hoof with us from Israel. When you're visiting, feel free to come visit. Both Ari Greenspan and myself have giraffe hoofs at home, but we can show you it's fully split. De-skinning. I haven't a clue what this means, but again, if we had time, I would click on this. You could hear the same person from Flatbush explain that you need to de-skin the animal before shechting, and he's not sure if a giraffe can be de-skinned. I don't know why you have to shecht it before shechting, and I don't know why he doesn't know if it can be de-skinned. It seems to present no problem at all. And they're the fully de-skinned giraffes.
Explain that giraffe died.
That giraffe died. We didn't shecht it. That giraffe died in the Ramakan Safari. They called us because they knew we were interested in dead giraffes. And we went and we did a full post-mortem on it, which you'll see in a moment. Okay, need for Masorah. Rabbi Ganak talked about that. I'm going to skip it. But for Kitzur, there does not seem to be a Masorah on giraffe. Some people, again, in the Halakha Brura, wanted to claim that because Rav Sadia Gaon translated the Zemer in next week's parsha as giraffe, maybe that's a Masorah. That would never work by birds, and that's not a Masorah. Masorah means ish mipi ish, door to door. We don't skip 1,000 years and say that's a Masorah. Okay, so the bottom line is, this person said, does the giraffe really have a split hoof? You need to clarify the facts. You can't sit only in the Beit Medrash for 120 years and hope to paskin shailas that are practical shailas. You do need people who are only in the Beit Medrash, you need theoreticians, but people who are going to do practical halakha have to get out of the Beit Medrash. Where do we see that in the Gemara? Well, Rav wanted to be matar, wanted to have to be matar abakor. To be matar abakor, you need to know the difference between a mum over and a mum kavur, a transient and a permanent blemish. How are you going to learn that? You can't stay in the Beit Medrash and learn what kind of mum is what. So what did Rav do? Vama Rav, Shmona Asa Kadoshim, Gadalti Eitzel, Da Eitzel Roa Behem, Leida Ezemu Kavur, Da Ezemu Mover. Rav left the Beit Medrash, and Rav went to live 18 months with the shepherds. Why? If you want to know what the difference between the two types of mum are, you've got to get out of the Beit Medrash and go learn. If a person wants to know if a giraffe has a split hoof, you're not going to find out in the Beit Medrash. You go to the zoo, you go to the safari, and there's no question. You don't have to write a whole column to decide, maybe the thin pad, yes, maybe the thin pad, no, there's no thin pad. You ask the giraffe to pick up his leg, and he'll show you. there's another proof here that now the Ganak actually quoted this Gemara. Who do you need a Masorah from? The Gemara questions, Amr Yitzchak of Torah Nechabot, Masoros, Naman, Sayyid, Loma, of the Torah, of Masali, Rabbi. My teacher told me that this is a kind of kosher bird. The Gemara says, Amr Yochanan, Abu Shabak, Ibrahim, Shmosan, Boy Rab Zera, Rabbo Chokum, or Rabbo Sayyid. Which Rebbe? Your Rebbe from the Yeshiva, or the Rebbe who's out in the field, the hunter? Toshma, Amr Yochanan, Abu Shabak, Ibrahim, Shmosan, Iyam, and Vishnu, Rabbo Sayyid, Shoker, Iyam, and Rabbo Chokum, Vishnu, Mashmayagam. He knows the name. He's great. He's learning in the Yeshiva. But, Ela Inu Miyodalu. How's he gonna know what the bird is? How's the guy who's been in the Beit Medrash all day gonna be able to tell you which bird is the Pasyon and which is the Chumlah? Ela Shmam Ela Lav Shmam. You're not Rav Sayyid Shmam. It's got to be the Rav who taught you the practical halacha. It's got to be the Rav who was out in the field and could identify the kosher birds. So, to clarify the facts, we did two giraffe sections. They've been written up in summary. I don't know. I think one of them may be in the source book over here. The quick summary of the dissections, the stomachs, again, to see if it has the four stomachs of Malagera, they are structurally identical to the stomachs of a cow. The Kana and the Veshet, maybe those landmarks of Widdishach aren't the same. Kana and the Veshet are structurally identical to the Kana and the Veshet, you see it over here, of Kana and the Veshet, and there again you see them. So the Kana and the Veshet in a cow. Now hold on, here are the lungs, skip through this here. The gallbladder was missing. We write about that in the article. I'll talk about that another time because we're running out of time. Conclusions, Masorah is good to have for the bison, for the buffalo, for the red deer, but not required according to most poskim. Teeth, the absence is dispositive. It doesn't have upper teeth. It's definitely kosher. Presence seems to be irrelevant, although the chief rabbi still disagrees with us on that. And the facts regarding hooves and other issues must be clarified. Giraffe, bison, yak, red deer, and water buffalo all seem to be kosher. Two of them will be served this evening. If you want to find out which one, we'll see you then. And finally, one more important slide. We just have to thank our wives. That's at the Yerushalayim dinner we did 4 years ago. And thank you.